when I traded in being the best for being my best, now I have some control over my attitude and my effort, where when I'm trying to be the best, I have no control really over what that person's doing, who I'm comparing myself to. It's always leaving me feeling like I am less than what I can be. But when I just focus in on being my best, now I can see the opportunities out there. I can devise a plan. I can prepare, and understanding that.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by book number two from Dominic Dom Brightman, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success. It is the field guide to help unleash the elite performer that is inside of you. Cop it today on Amazon.com or heading over to DomBrightman.com and snag it in book, ebook, and audiobook. So that way you can take it on the go and get yourself on the go to your northbound success. And today on the Highlight Reel Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special awesome human for you today, my friends. That's right indeed. You're going to be in for a treat that's good enough to eat, y'all. That's right indeed, because today's wonderful guest, y'all. One of the rarities for this show, because this list is a prestigious list to make. The man is a Wall Street Journal bestseller, y'all. That's right indeed, a Wall Street Journal bestselling bookcaster, because not only he has published 2 wonderful best-selling books, he's also a fellow podcast host as well. So be sure to check out and subscribe to the show when we put it in the show notes. And on top of that, he's a father, a husband, speaker, leadership coach, a three-time SEC Coach of the Year, as well as the winningest head coach in history of the University of Kentucky women's basketball program. So let's give it up for the Eminem himself, Matthew Mitchell.
Thank you so much, Dom. What an honor it is to be with you. I appreciate you having me on today. Excited to be here.
Heck yeah. Excited to have you on, my man. That's right indeed. I was like, shoot, like ready to win? Yeah, I need to be ready to win. This dude's actually freaking won something. You're the real deal.
You know, it's like I tell everybody when I would walk in the room and talk to the players, and you ask, you know, who wants to win? Everybody's going to raise their hand. You're going to get 100% on that. And so I said, well, now what we have to be, the real question is, are you ready to win? We have to get ready to win. So that's where the inspiration of the book came. It's about preparation. And for all of us who are trying to achieve at a high level and have aspirations of being our very best, preparation is important. So that's what the book's all about, and I had a great time writing it, and have had a great time since it came out back last November. So it's been really good.
Good in all the neighborhoods. That's what I'm talking about, indeed. That's right, indeed. And the funny thing is, probably the mini Matt didn't even think you would be the current Matt. So what was it like on your journey to get to the current Matthew Mitchell that you are today, my man? Because you probably thought you're gonna be doing something else and not being a legendary retired basketball coach and a best-selling author.
it's so true. Grew up in a great family, rural Mississippi, out in the middle of nowhere. It's hard to get to where I grew up, hard to get there, but a great place. Had 2 wonderful parents who I was the youngest of 4 boys, and so we were just outside all the time playing sports. Sports was a huge part of our existence. We were always playing games, making up games. And I was a little bit younger than my 3 older brothers. And so I did a bunch of, and they'd be like, this little kid, we don't want him around. So I played a lot of games just in my mind, imagination. And I just love sports. And back in those days, you know, before 24-hour television and games, every game's on now, it was so precious to be able to watch a game, you know, the game of the week on baseball or football or basketball. And just got so inspired by those great athletes, and so then eventually became a good athlete in high school and college, and it just always was a big part of my life. And so out as a young, early 20s, trying to, you know, people were telling me, you need to get into the business world. Business is where it is. That's where you can make money. You can't make any money coaching. And I was just spinning my wheels, Dom. I really was having a hard time. And I got some great inspiration from my high school coach. I was lamenting the fact that I was spinning my wheels, going nowhere, didn't feel like I was contributing anything to society and wasn't doing very well professionally. And he said, you know, Matthew, I always thought you'd be a good coach. I said, really? Because I had been kind of hard to coach, Dom. You know, I was all I want to do is shoot the ball all the time. And I laugh. I would have had a hard time coaching me. That would have been tough on me with the coach that I became in basketball. But he inspired me to take that path. And it was just some great advice. And so I began a career in coaching, and it was very, very fulfilling. And you're right, a bit unexpected.
Ah, yeah, that's right indeed. That's right indeed. And you actually got to work under Pat Summitt too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. One of the great themes throughout my life is I've just been so blessed with these remarkable people who I've been able to be around and who I've had an opportunity to learn from. And you know, I started out as a high school teacher and coach at the recommendation of my basketball coach in high school. And I had huge dreams at the time. When I first started, Dom, I actually thought I was going to coach the Lakers. That was my goal. I loved the Lakers and Showtime, and I love Magic Johnson. Figured out I couldn't play like Magic Johnson, so I said maybe I can slick my hair back and get a nice suit like Pat Riley, you know, and I'll go coach the Lakers. And so then I found out how difficult coaching actually is, and I settled in, and I had a goal of just being a great high school teacher and coach. I sort of found my place there and wasn't thinking much about the Lakers. And on that journey, I would go out in the summertime and work camps for these different coaches, just trying to learn and gain more knowledge about the art and science of coaching. And so one of the camps I ended up at was University of Tennessee, and Pat Summitt at that time, when I started working for her in the summertime, she was in the run of three straight national championships, 96, 97, 98. And so I just tried to soak everything up I could being around her in the summertime. And to my great surprise, in the summer of 99, she offered me a job to be her graduate assistant. Could have picked 10,000 people, 10 million people probably wanted the job. And she gave me that opportunity, and it literally changed my life from how I viewed leadership and viewed success and viewed coaching. That was one great benefit, but then how people viewed me being attached to Pat Summitt, it was just unbelievable. Someone who wouldn't have a conversation with you 12 months before, you worked for Pat Summitt for a year, now all of a sudden they want to spend time with you. So she was just a force of nature. She was one of a kind. She was one of the greats of all time. We lost her way too soon to early onset dementia. But she, I was making a talk last night with a group and signing some books at the end, and somebody came up and I told them about that part of my journey, and they were just talking about how she had impacted them just as a fan and someone watching Tennessee basketball. So huge, huge figure in my life, and really opened up the opportunity to coach at the highest level of college basketball. And so after working for her about 6 or 7 years later, you know, I found myself competing against her when I was named the coach at Kentucky, and that was pretty surreal to take the court against her the first time. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Definitely indeed. Definitely indeed. So how was that like, man, in the early start back? Because Kentucky wasn't known for winning, at least the women's program, right? When you first came in.
Yeah, no doubt. For all of the great tradition, over 100 years of success of men's basketball, the women's basketball team had not experienced any sustained success. And there had been pockets here and there, but there had never really been any sustained success. And that's one thing that in my business now that I'm trying to take from what I learned in building the program at Kentucky from one that when I started there as an assistant coach, Dom, in 2003, we were at the absolute bottom. There was nowhere to go but up. We were literally the worst program in the Southeastern Conference. And so the legendary Hall of Fame coach, Mickey DeMoss, who hired me to be her top assistant at the time, she did a great job of getting it from the bottom to respectability. But we were still a long way from the top, even when you were just at respectable. There was a big gap between that and where we wanted to go. And so over the course of 13 years, we went from, you know, the bottom to respectability to finally champions. And we won the Southeastern Conference Championship in 2012, which in those days, and I argue now, is the best women's basketball college conference in the country. And so it was quite a feat to pull off. And we did it through principled-driven thinking, through what we call the winning tools, honesty, hard work, and discipline. And that's how we built the program. And we had over a decade of sustained success. And so all of those things that happen in athletics and everything that we did was centered around bringing the team into full potential and making them understand what they could accomplish, and then encouraging them and holding them accountable to step into their potential. And so that's really what we do now. There's no difference in what you have to do to perform and compete in sports, besides maybe the physical part of it. But the competitive part and the performance part is identical to trying to succeed in your business. And so that's what this company is all about, taking all everything that I learned. And, man, there's a lot of ups and downs and a lot of trial and error and a lot of starts and stops and wins and lessons. And so what we do for business now, we've taken all that and we really know how to address underperformance. So I know there's a lot of pain out there for people who want to get their team, and they see their team and they know there's more there. They know they might be doing pretty well, successful, but they just know there's something more in them, and that's called underperformance, and that's really what we address, and we help you get your team where they all understand their role, they step into their potential, they work together, they know where they need each other, they know where they need to step forward, and that's really what we have learned we're great at solving for businesses, and I learned all that coaching college basketball.
That's what I'm talking about, dude. That's what I'm talking about, dude. And made a freaking great name for yourself on top of that. So how's the transition like when you decided to step down from coaching and step into entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I had an entrepreneurial spirit the entire time I was coaching. You know, building a college basketball program, especially at a place like Kentucky, was much like a startup. And all along the way, we progressed and we grew. So I had a traumatic brain injury in 2020, right during the middle of COVID, when we were running the program virtually at the time. And I didn't know it was as bad as it was at the time, but I ended up having a subdural hematoma. They had to do surgery. Now, I do qualify, Dom, any, it wasn't major brain surgery. Any surgery on my brain's minor brain surgery. So you can't really be too concerned about that part. But nevertheless, I had to have brain surgery. And one of the results of that is I had to step away from the team, take a medical leave of absence. I also had to step, we were running the whole program virtually. I had to step away from the screen. And so this left me with a lot of time to think, and it just seemed the right time to make the, I'd been coaching for 25 years. The program was extremely successful at Kentucky, and I just felt a call to do something different at that period of my life. And so I knew I wanted to coach and help people, and I wanted to, you know, another example of people stepping into your life and being so fortunate and blessed. When we really started cooking at Kentucky, it was because I decided to stop focusing on just being a great technical basketball coach and recruiter, and I really embraced the idea of being a leader. And a gentleman named John Maxwell is who led me toward that, and I know you are familiar with John and are a certified Maxwell trainer. And so that really transformed my mind into using basketball as the laboratory to develop these leaders. And so the players, basketball was so temporary for them that I wanted them to have a rich and deep experience that lasted beyond basketball. And so once I stepped away from coaching basketball and on the college level, I have to tell people I'm not retired. I am the head coach at the Lexington School for the middle school team. I am, and we're in the Final Four this weekend, Dom, I want you to know. So we still are doing things on the basketball court, but it's at the middle school level. But when I stepped away from college basketball, I still knew I wanted to impact people and help people learn how to activate their potential, how to embrace being a leader. At the very least, Dom, we're leading ourselves. So when someone says I'm not a leader, not entirely accurate. At the very least, you have to lead yourself well. So the transition was really exciting because I had never wanted a player to sit in the same meeting twice. So I had created over 13 years and then 2 years as a head coach at Morehead State before I came to Kentucky, over 15 years of being a head coach. I had created so much content around leadership. And so it took me a while just to go through that. And that was a wonderful exercise to really find my leadership voice in this space. And so wrote my first book, Winning Tools, and that came out last year. And now the second one is Ready to Win, and it's out now. And so the transition was just so energizing for me to see what all had been created over this time. And now to package that where we can really deliver and address underperformance and in someone's business and help them start performing at their absolute maximum potential. It's just been awesome. And there's so, again, I'll say it, I'll repeat it again. There's so many parallels between business performance and what you have to do and the steps you have to take to building a championship basketball team. And so, you know, along the way, so many fun experiences, a lot of stories that I can share, examples. So we try to really be dynamic in our teaching and entertaining in our teaching. And I think people, when they're having a good time and can stay focused, it really helps them. So the transition into this space was really energizing for me.
Energizing, dude. I could tell. I could feel the freaking passion through the freaking headphones, baby. You love to freaking see it. You love to freaking see it, indeed. Because, yeah, and it was such a good thing that you're actually focused on helping the folks who played for you to really just have those tools and those wonderful core values instilled in them. Because, yeah, basketball is such a short amount of time for their lives. Like, depending on the situation, it's like, hey, not everybody's going to make the WNBA or choose to go that route. Like, life is so much longer in terms of runway. So, my goodness, man, one of my favorite underlines from your wonderful book, Ready to Win, when you were talking about an environment of excellence, man. So for those in business looking to create their own environment of excellence for their company, man, any tips for folks to do that?
Absolutely. The concept that we talk about in the book is a lot of us, and I was one of them, I learned it in the real world and real competition, is I didn't know this about myself, but I had a real perfectionist streak because a lot of times I was hearing these two voices in my head that I believed I could succeed. But then when I would get there, I would hear this other voice like, what in the world are you doing? And so the inner critic or imposter syndrome, there's a lot of, you know, science out there about what that voice is. For me, it was my inner critic. And I would get paralyzed because I would be trying to make the perfect plan. I was seeking perfection. And in athletics, you know, you would have all of these examples of the great coach that was a pioneer of the NFL, Vince Lombardi, would talk about being perfect and run the play perfect. And, you know, you would hear these things as a young coach. And, you know, the inner critic would be telling me that I, you know, wasn't that great and didn't know what I was doing. And so I never even imagined that I had a perfectionist streak about me. But when I finally did enough work to figure out, and I've sought out some mentors and people that really helped me. They said, you know, perfection is just really impossible to sustain. You might have, you know, one perfect rep, or you might have one perfect possession in a game, but you're never going to have a perfect game. It's going to be filled with challenges. You're going to make mistakes. Really what you're looking for is trade in perfection for excellence. And so when I stopped comparing myself to the best coaches in the country. And so another problem that leaders have that really want to achieve at a high level, they compare themselves to the industry leader and who is doing the best job. So when I would compare myself to Pat Summitt, or I would compare myself to Gino Auriemma, or whoever were the great coaches that had so much more experience than me, and when I would compare myself, then I saw all of the gaps in my life, and so that was comparison. So when I traded in being the best for being my best, now I have some control over my attitude and my effort, where when I'm trying to be the best, I have no control really over what that person's doing, who I'm comparing myself to. It's always leaving me feeling like I am less than what I can be. But when I just focus in on being my best, Dom, now I can see the opportunities out there. I can devise a plan. I can prepare. And so in the book, we try to talk about shifting from being a perfectionist to being a person who wants to live a life of excellence, and understanding that excellence and being my best is very rewarding. We say in the book, excellence is its own reward, is the first mindset you have to have when you start thinking about being a person of great preparation, being a level 5 person of preparation. And so that is a concept that we really flesh out in the book, and I think is really, really useful and resonates with so many leaders who are, you know, I was successful when I learned this. We were winning games and we were at a championship level, but man, was there so much angst and agony along the way to get there. And when I made this shift, we continued to be successful, but the atmosphere was better. We were able to work better together. I was much more effective as a leader and a deliverer of the message that needed to be there. And so I would just encourage people to read that part of the book and really think about where they are in their life. And if they're, you know, in the book I say, you know, perfection paralyzes. If I tried to write this book perfectly, ready to win, then the first sentence has got to be perfect. And so that'd take me 20 years to write Ready to Win. If I'm going to try to just do the best book that I can, now I can get started. So excellence, perfection paralyzes, excellence exhilarates. You see all the opportunities. You see the path. You know it's not going to be perfect. You know there's going to be challenges. You're going to make mistakes. And you just start to inhabit this attitude of there are no losses. There's only lessons. There's only the opportunity to learn from whatever didn't go your way. And so it's been really effective for me, and I was glad to share that in the book.
Yeah, so glad you did indeed, because I'm like, shoot. Like a lot of things that folks don't even really think about, or you don't really hear about, is really just that preparation. Then of course that environment of excellence. Like, dude, like that was probably one of my favorite highlights from the book so far. I still need to finish reading it and giving it a rating online, or you definitely got to review it. And it's just the fact that, like, preparation, that's something you really don't hear about at all, especially like even in leadership. It's like, oh yeah, prepare. Like, you really don't hear that. You hear about like what to do now, maybe like vision casting. You ever hear about the work that you have to do to really be ready for that vision to be fulfilled like that?
Yeah.
So it's like good that you decided to put that out there indeed. So what was the most challenging part about putting, heck, even both your books together with all them years of head coaching and experience, man, like all that content, being able to put it into some readable content for the busy individual? Because the good news is, like, I'm glad you made these books easy to read and quick to read, because a lot of folks won't have time for 300 plus pages, because I'm pretty sure you probably could have wrote a 600 page leadership book.
It's a great leadership lesson that I learned a long time ago. So many of us who are able to lead at a high level have so many things going on in our brain. We're solving a lot of problems. Life is really dynamic. There's a lot of complexity to life. And the beauty that I learned was I had a meeting one time with a great, who's a great friend of mine now. He's the athletic director at Auburn University down in Auburn, Alabama, John Cohen. At the time, I was the head women's basketball coach at Kentucky, and he was the baseball coach at Kentucky, and just a great coach, great leader. And I said, hey, you know, John, I just think my stuff is too simple. I think there needs to be more there. And he's like, man, you've been working your whole career to get to this point, and now you're ready to go because you have simplified it. You have, it's simple, but never confuse simple with easy. Just because it's simple, our concepts, honesty, hard work, discipline, those are simple to grasp. If you say, hey, should you be honest, you're going to get the hands raised. Should you work hard or should you not? You know, most people that really want to do something understand you got to put forth some effort. They're going to raise the hand. Should you be disciplined or undisciplined? They're going to raise their hand that they should be disciplined. But how do they do that? And that's where I've been able to get it down into some simplicity, cut through the complexity so someone can grasp it and really activate it in their leadership, in their personal growth. And so the danger for me to this day, Dom, is I want to do too much. I want to, you know, gosh, I need to give this, I need to give that. And so I had to live my principles, and I had to be honest with what do people really need. I had to work hard to put the plan together. I had to have the discipline to execute. And so I think that's a good lesson for our listeners here today, is that there's really three steps to being successful in your personal growth, in your family relationships, in your professional pursuits. Do you have the talent? Do you have the skill? Do you have the energy to execute? And so there's a lot there, but I just will quickly want to let people know, you know, you got to get to three yeses on that. And we talk about that in our business and coach that. But if you're lacking in talent, you don't have to have the most talent. You just have to have enough. If you get to a yes that I have enough talent to do this. Now, if someone came to me, Dom, and said, hey, you are a championship coach. You're a best-selling author. We need you to come run NASA. We need you to come run NASA. All right? And so, you know, it would take us about probably 7, you know, probably by 4 o'clock if we started at 9 o'clock in the morning. Probably by 4 o'clock people would be saying, this guy does not need to be running NASA because he has no he has no aeronautical engineering talent. I don't have an engineering brain. I don't have the talent to function in that area. So we do need to have enough talent in our area. And then skill, competency, those are things that we can acquire. Those are things that we can go out and get more of. If we don't have enough, we go get it. Or we hire someone or engage someone that helps us with that. And then that energy part's really important for people to think about. How are they taking care of their physical energy, their mental energy, their emotional energy? Those things are important. But if you can get to three yeses, now you can go. Now you can go out there and perform. And that's really, really important for leaders to think about.
Important indeed. Well, when it comes to getting ready to win, you can do all the preparation in the world, but setbacks usually show up on the way too. So has there been a major setback in life or in business that ended up being a setup for success for you?
No question. That's an easy one to answer. We were at a championship level, won the SEC championship in 2012, won school record number of games, 30 games in 2013, two Elite Eights in a row. But we kept in the Elite Eight is the game before the Final Four. So for people who are not basketball fans, In college, in the NCAA, for a college basketball team, the Final Four is really, really what every high level team wants to get there. And so making the Final Four is big time. Certainly winning the national championship is big time, but can't win the national championship unless you get to the Final Four.
Yep.
We kept running into University of Connecticut. We ran into them 2 years in a row in 12 and 13. And I got obsessed with beating Connecticut. I was in that comparison. I was in that comparison curse. I got obsessed with beating Connecticut. And so I started getting focused on, and here's the other thing that was happening. We were doing a great job in recruiting, but we were finishing second to Connecticut. So that got me further. So a kid would call up and say, "Coach, I love it. Love you. Love Kentucky, but I'm going to UConn."
Ouch.
So, yeah, so further I got obsessed with that. And so I made some personnel decisions that were solely focused on trying to get the talent, acquiring the talent. And so the thought was I was going to go and get international talent to match the team that I at Connecticut. And so long story short, I made some personnel decisions that ended up really backfiring, and we lost we lost our staff, we lost a lot of players, and in the midst of this really successful run, we had this huge setback. It was a huge setback where basically we just had to rebuild the team, and the next year we were down to playing with, you know, six players, and we recruited some walk-ons to come on, and just had to kind of piece the team together, all because I had taken my eye off the ball of really living the winning tools and being disciplined in my approach and comparing myself to UConn instead of seeing it was a meteoric rise of where we went from like 2009 to 2013. We'd gone from mediocre to champions. And so I learned there, and it was just so painful, and it was so complex, and something was just happening every day, and I never knew when it was just going to finally hit the bottom so we could start climbing back up. And that's when I learned that the winning tools are so, so powerful, because I got down to, is this an honesty situation? Is this a challenge that I need to meet with? Do I need to look at it with the lens of honesty? Do I need to speak to it with honesty? Does this require more work, more effort, more hard work, more planning, more problem solving? So I would put it in that bucket if that's where it need, or is this a discipline issue? And so I was able to cut through all the complexity of that huge setback where we really had to. We're on top, and now we're having to rebuild the program. And that was so, so helpful for me to go through that painful, painful time. And that's what I encourage leaders now. Listen, I learned so much. It's so painful to go through, Dom, but you can learn incredible lessons, and you can get incredible clarity from huge setbacks. And that's exactly what happened for me. And grateful for that, because I now pay so much attention to personnel, pay so much attention to talent acquisition. That's got to line up in a certain way instead of just going and acquiring talent. Are they talented enough? But then are they a tactical fit, and are they a cultural fit for my organization? Mm-hmm. Really, really important going forward. Learn that lesson from a huge setback in my career.
Yeah, so I'm talking about, dude. You love to see it bouncing back, baby. That's right, indeed. It's like, yeah, we're going to get these weapons, Joe. We're going to get this great freaking talent the world has never freaking seen. We're going to take over the freaking earth, baby. Age is going to be SEC. It's going to be the whole freaking planet. We got this covered like a blanket. It was like, maybe, you know, it was such a good idea after all. Like, all right. Yeah. I mean, I'll learn a lesson here on that.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea was good. The execution was poor. So, you know, you got to get both. And so that's what we try to get to in the book is what preparation does. It just gets you powerfully positioned to win. It gets you in position to win more. And so we're not going to win all the time, but the more I prepare, the more I get in position to win. And it's just so powerful to really read this book and start to implement the steps and the techniques. I just can't tell you what a big difference it's made for me in my life. And that's why I was so happy to write it and to share it. And I think people can get a lot from what we've learned around this important topic of preparation.
Important indeed. And if I'm not mistaken, faith is also an important part of your life, my man. So being raised in the Bible Belt, you're probably around faith figures all the time. But has there been a time where it really became real for you in your life, my man?
Well, that's where John Maxwell came into play. I wasn't aware of John Maxwell at this point in my career. 2009, we were going into our third season, and we were 33-32 and very mediocre. And it was not, you know, I thought I was going to take over the world, like you were saying, and we were not taking over anything. We were barely keeping our head above water. And a good friend that's got a sports ministry here in Central Kentucky, Robbie Spear, it's called Sports Reach. It's a fantastic sports ministry. He would go around to all the coaches, college and high school coaches, before the season, and he'd always give you a book. He'd have a book of the year, and he'd give you a book. And it just, you know, a real, real encouraging person. And then that year, in the fall of 2009, he put on my desk the Maxwell Leadership Bible. And so really at that point in time, faith was always important. I was so appreciative that my parents taught me that. That was the greatest gift they ever gave me. But I was able to go deeper because this really made more sense of the scripture for me, and it gave me so many leadership lessons. And so from reading that book, really helped me deepen my faith, helped me get focused on what were the right things to do, gave me some courage to make some bold leadership decisions. We completely changed our style of play and our approach. And it was very, you know, people considered to be very risky, but I had the courage to do that because I had the faith that God had good things planned for me. And maybe it wasn't being the coach of Kentucky, but no matter what it was going to be good. And so after that, I started getting every book I could of John's. But that was the turning point for me in 2009. And so, you know, from that point until now, it's just very important for me to strengthen my spirit. And when I am operating at my very highest level, that's because I'm investing in my spiritual life and my faith. And I cannot be my most effective self, my most effective leader, if I don't pay attention to that part of my makeup and that part of my being and my existence.
Good deal indeed. You love to see it indeed. Yeah, because, yeah, being raised in a church, it's like, all right, cool, I'm around it. It's good times and everything. But it's like, yeah, sometimes you just need that extra push to really make it real for yourself and to be like, all right, so this is my faith for real. It ain't just the handed down generational faith, and it can play a role in your life. And it's good to see it's still part of your life to this day, my man. So my goodness, so since you're going on a bit of a tour promoting your magical work, my man, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often when you're doing interviews like this?
Well, I just think the question is, what impact can preparation actually have, and how long is it going to take for this to start making a difference in my life? Because I think sometimes people get comfortable with just moving through the rhythm of life. They've settled into a rhythm of life. They've settled into a rhythm of production. They don't really think that there's any more out there for them. And, you know, how is this really going to move me forward? What's this really going to do? And so the thing I love about preparation is that you're going to see immediate impact in your life. You're going to see immediate impact in your week. So if you start investing in your preparation on a Sunday night, and then you look back on Friday afternoon of what's happened, that first week, you're going to see some tangible results of how that week went better than the week when you didn't prepare. But the immediate gains are awesome and are motivating. But what I really want people to know is that if you embrace this as part of your makeup and part of your leadership toolbox, that I'm going to seek to be the most prepared person in the room. When I walk in the room, I'm going to know that nobody else has to know the fact that I know that I walk in the room and I'm the most prepared person. That is going to give you a confidence that allows you to perform at a level that is so much greater than where you are right now. If you are not, if you're just in that rhythm and you're just in that, I'm going to turn in some good work product. It's going to be solid. It's going to be good enough. If you will embrace the tenets of this book, you are going to go to a level that you just probably don't even think is possible right now. And that's really the message that I want people to get about this book, is that this is going to set you up for sustained success time after time. You're not going to win them all, but you're going to win a bunch of them. And it's because you embrace and you become a person of constant preparation, level 5 preparation, and it's going to transform your life.
That's what I'm talking about, Dane. Because folks want that life transformation right there. Indeed, that's what I'm talking about, indeed. Well, fun question for you. Fabulous book, Ready to Win, How Great Leaders Succeed Through Preparation. If that book were a food, what would it be and why?
Oh, man, that would be a T-bone steak, baby. I'm telling you, it would be a T-bone steak, because you're going to get absolutely delicious knowledge is going to fill your brain, just like that delicious T-bone steak is going to fill your belly. And it's that's an easy one for me.
That's surprisingly the first one to say T-bone steak on this podcast, which is hilarious to me. We had asked like 300 authors so far that question. It's hilarious.
That's the most honest answer I can give you.
And that means the book is terrific.
That's right. You got it. Without a doubt.
Oh, man. Oh, coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive, and that is, if you're to wake up tomorrow and you are 25 again, but you're still in the current year, what advice would you give to yourself?
For me, that's so easy. I would tell my 25-year-old self I would have gotten a 15-year start on making faith the most important part of my existence, and everything else will flow from that. And paying attention to my spirit and waking up every day and feeding my spirit to prepare for the day. That's the advice I'd give today. If I went back at 25 that year, or if it was this year in 25-year-old self, when I'm strong there, I can be my best. I can be my authentic self. And that is the tip that I would give my 25-year-old self. You know, we talk about strengthening your spirit, your emotions, your physical body in existence, your professional competency, and then paying attention to having some fun every now and then. Those 5 areas are really important. And for me, it starts with feeding my spirit early in the day, and things just flow so much better when I do that.
I can say that again, indeed. Definitely say that again, indeed. You'll love to see it. You'll love to see it. Well, the good news is, folks got a freaking good deal of content from you. And it ain't even all that you know. It's a whole bunch more. It's probably only 5%. So for those that dive into the other 95% of what the magical, magical Matthew knows, the championship-winning Matthew, and buying copies of your magical books on top of that, what's the best way for folks to do so?
CoachMatthewMitchell.com. They can go there and find out about our Lead 52 program that helps a team walk through 1 year in each week. They are coached on how to come together, how to bring out the best in their individual performers, and then how that comes together throughout the week as a team. And so it's the ultimate teamwork resource. And then Winning Tools 365 is where I actually come in and coach your organization. And so they can find out about that at CoachMatthewMitchell.com. They can book a call with a member of our team, and would love them to do that. We've got just a few slots available left for 2025, but there is some availability there. So CoachMatthewMitchell.com. And then my podcast every Wednesday, Coach Matthew Mitchell Show. We do some teaching and some leading there, but also have some great guests on. So that's another place where they can find out what's going on and reach us. So and on all socials, Coach Matthew Mitchell.
Woo-hoo! We heard it from the coach himself, baby. Coach Eminem Matthew Mitchell, man, has got you covered like a blanket. Three blankets during a winter time indeed. So we should cop some copies of his magical books and subscribe to his wonderful show, y'all, because he's just getting started. Y'all, he's got more great stuff that awaits you. You probably even got another book coming out this year, I bet, don't you?
How did you know, Dom? Wow, you are reading my mind. I do. I will have my third ones coming out later this year. So we're excited about it and excited about the winning tools, honesty, hard work, discipline. Would love to come in and teach people how that can elevate their performance, solve that issue, the pain that underperformance causes, and we will get it done for them.
Sweet. Well, we definitely got to have you back on when that book launches indeed, because we know it's going to be gold like the other two indeed. So my goodness, any parting words before we close up shop?
Yeah, I just want to encourage people to embrace preparation. It's going to get you in a powerful position to win, ready to win. They can buy that book anywhere there where you can access them digitally. It's there for you. So just get prepared and see what happens with your life and your performance, and it's going to be good for you.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for free, and be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.